the Seagram's block of Oshawa, Ontario. I'm an idol.
Don't be scared, homie.
The world is smiling at you. The wrestling business is smiling at you. And don't you frown back on it.
Surprise, surprise, motherfucker. The king is back.
The man to hour. The man with the power. Too sweet to be sour.
Dylan Bunker.
I'm talking to you, Vice Chairman at Grand Prairie Combative Sports Commission. Also, veteran Manitoba wrestler under the pseudonym Steve Stryker. I'm talking to Darren Metzlar. How's it going, man?
It's going well, Dylan. Pleasure to be here.
I wanted to talk about that XFFC show as well, XFFC 15 Heatwave, because that was a big one, and you had a key involvement in that for sure, being that you have that Grand Prairie position there. So what were your thoughts on what unfurled there?
I thought it was another great show by promoter Darren Cliff. He always puts on great events because he puts a lot of thought into the matchups and what the fans would like. He tries his best to get the best, if you will.
Yeah, and there was a high-stakes battle with William and Randy there. The winner takes all, and the other person goes nothing.
That was an interesting matchup. I wasn't quite sure. I was on the fence about letting that one go originally. But both were contractual professionals that had a win purse and a show purse and a win purse, with the premise being whoever lost would get the other person's show purse. So from that aspect, it was okay. But, you know, those two really left it out there. Randy caught him, you know, got caught in a pretty, pretty deep guillotine, and very surprised that he didn't pass out. You know, they both... It was an incredible fight. It was emotional on every level you could think a fight could be, and more with the stakes what they were.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a very very stacked card altogether. And something I was noticing was the prevalence of the amateur fights on there. And I feel like in Canada specifically, the amateur scene has been, you know, refined more and more as time goes on. And I think XFFC does a great job at, you know, giving a platform for these amateur fighters. So how important is it to, you know, keep going forward with improving amateur mixed martial arts and sort of refining it?
Well, let's be careful what we say as far as refining it, because amateurs is where the sport is growing. You can't really refine amateur. Amateur is where you get refined to go professional. So as far as amateur, it's getting the opportunity to grow the sport, which is most important and missed most, because lawmakers, you know, on the federal level, when they changed the laws, really made it tricky. That's why there was a bit of a hiatus here with amateurs in Grand Prairie. But now that we have them back, you know, British Columbia has an incredible amateur MMA scene. A lot of those fighters have come over. Darren Cliff has looked around for great amateurs. And again, it's having that opportunity to grow the sport. And like any sport, be it hockey or baseball or football or basketball, you need an amateur scene to create the future professionals. And it's great to have that opportunity here.
Yeah, for sure. I just meant in as far as, like, if there was new sort of measures coming forward with the amateur MMA, because I think in Grand Prairie, that's one of the, you know, better commissions as far as getting these guys that sort of key amateur experience there. But one of the key amateur fights was actually for the amateur featherweight title there. So how important do you think it is for fighters at the amateur level to have that, you know, thing to strive for, that, like, amateur capstone sort of thing, like a title, and to have the opportunity to go fight?
Again, it's an opportunity to prove that you're the best in your weight class. You know, Solomon was all game, and Brandon Gardner was coming off a couple of year hiatus, so it's not like he was fresh out of the cage, and they both brought it. And I got to tell you, if anybody has a chance to see that fight, Brandon Gardner sports the meanest old school mustache you'll ever see. It reminds me of the Baron from Mike Tyson's Punch Out. Just an incredible look on the guy, hair kind of slicked back, old school. You know, Jim Braddock look, and with the mustache, it's pretty solid, man.
Sort of had like a Bronson kind of vibe to it a little bit.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, and the fight itself, I mean, you know, again, it shows Darren Cliff's incredible matchmaking skills with this card. You know, a lot of people look at the names and they're like, well, you know, I'm not familiar with this guy, not familiar with that guy, or it's local fighters. But of the 11 bouts that happened at Heatwave, 7 of the 11 went into the third round, and 6 of them went to scorecards. So it made for almost a 5-hour show from start to finish with only one quick 10-15 minute intermission. So, wow, it was a long night.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a historic event in the sense that it was the first time an MMA event was held outdoors in Alberta. So how was that? Did it, how, like, were there certain nerves going in? Like, were you kind of waiting on bated breath, almost like a
train
or something?
Well, yes and no. Again, I you know, going back to my pro wrestling days, I've been around this for 25 years now almost. And, you know, in the wrestling days, you know, you do crazy outdoor shows all the time. Now, the only difference, again, you know, people get a little apprehensive or a little nervous. Oh, it's an MMA show. What? No. MMA fans are fantastic. They're absolutely fantastic because the action in the ring is where they're able to blow off their energy, right? You know, if it's boring, then they're going to get mischievous. But if the action is there, then they're occupied. I mean, of course, you get, you know, a little bit of the drink in people, and then their local fighter comes out, or their buddy that they work with is on the show. It adds to the ambiance. And being outside, you know, other than the fear of Mother Nature, of course, which all night long we're playing back and forth with rain clouds, but we didn't get a drop the entire show. We got so lucky, Dylan.
Yeah, it sounds like it was kind of tight there, but a good show overall by the sounds of it. Is there any other, you know, parting thoughts you wanted to add on that show overall?
And another classy, awesome professional amateur event put on by promoter Darren Cliff. I don't want to sound like I'm pandering too much, but he's pretty much the only guy that does MMA in Grand Prairie, and he does it well every time. And again, the main event, seeing, you know, Damian Johnston, an undefeated fighter, going against another undefeated fighter and two-time Canadian amateur champ, Alex Martinez, who's now 3-0 as a professional, I believe. Maybe he's 4-0 now. I think he's 4-0 now. 3-0. Either way, he's probably one of the best 155-pounders in Canada right now, and soon possibly the world. I mean, sure, he needs some seasoning still and some tougher competition, but Alex is a special fighter. He really is, and the world will see him soon enough.
Yeah, and that was a big, big win for sure. I wanted to kind of switch gears, though, and talk about the G1 Climax a little bit. I understand you're quite a big Japanese wrestling fan. And
Of course. You know, Japanese wrestling, of course, North America, you've got, growing up in Winnipeg, you know, in the territory days, you had the AWA, the American Wrestling Association, based out of Minneapolis, and that was our territory. You know, Alberta predominantly Stampede, and then Vancouver, you had All-Star, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, growing up watching pro wrestling, you know, Nick Bockwinkel was one of my big guys. But as I became a professional wrestler, I followed, you know, they call them the four pillars of heaven in Japan. There's four incredible wrestlers, Misawa and guys like that. And Kenta Kobashi was one of the guys I always followed, respected, tried to be stylistic around, always hard-hitting. Not so much, you know, the strong style, because strong style doesn't quite work in North America. But it might get here eventually. But yeah, G1, not to get too far off the top. See, I'm proud of it. I love Japanese wrestling, the whole culture. But this one's G1. I mean, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I get your point about strong style culture at this point not necessarily being translated as well to North American audiences. I think they get it to a degree, but I don't know that it's presented in exactly like the right way at this junction.
Again, in Japan, there's a huge difference between a North American style and a Japanese style, and not just the in-ring product, but the actual booking itself, right?
Yeah.
Because in North America, you know, WWE's got to fill in hours upon hours of both live and taped television every week they're obligated to do, whereas in Japan, they're a little smarter, a little more emotional, a little more, I'm not going to say creative, just a little more legitimate in the sense of how the fans are thinking. You know, people, you know, there's fans there too, just like here, but it's a different type, you know, different thought out. Like, I mean, you look at the G1 and the way it's playing out this year. Last year, the first time a gaijin, which many people may or may not know is the term for foreigner in Japan for a wrestler that comes from outside of the country, Kenny Omega was the first one to win it, the first gaijin to win the G1. And again, proud of Kenny, he's a Winnipegger. So, you know, way early in Kenny's days when he was a surfer dude in Winnipeg, I had the pleasure of working a couple of wrestling matches with Kenny. And you knew then he was special. And you see it now. You know, now he's the IWGP there. Well, I guess so, IWGP United States champion. now, which is a gorgeous belt, one of the best ever made as far as design. But yeah, that G1, it could be another year for a Gaijin. They're really teasing that the way the rankings are going, the way they're playing it out. I mean, with guys like Zack Sabre Jr. in the tournament, and again Kenny Omega, they're all having strong showings. But most fans have been talking about the potential of Ibushi and Omega in the finals, and I don't know if they're going to do that, because I think if I was to have a crystal ball with this tournament and the way it's going, Okada and Omega, and a lot of people are familiar with Kazuchika Okada. He's the champion in New Japan right now, and him and Kenny have had just, those are the Meltzer put him 6 stars, and everybody's like, wow, you more than 6 stars. It's that freaking good. And then they went to a draw on their second bout. I got a sneaking suspicion Kenny's going to win their bout in the G1 tournament. No title on the line, but just to make a point so he wins the tournament or wins his group or his block. So, and Suzuki's in there. You've got in the A block Tanahashi. You can't forget about him. You can't forget about Naito. If people weren't, if people tuned out of the North American product for a second and actually embraced New Japan Pro Wrestling, they might never turn it off. It is just that incredible. If you're a purist, you like the moves, you like the action, it's hard to top it. I mean, yeah, WWE is by far, anybody who wants to be a professional wrestler should strive to be a WWE wrestler, to be at WrestleMania. It is the top promotion in the world. Don't be fooled. But for purists and fans who are tired of the circus, quote unquote, this might be their flavor. It's something you just got to watch.
Yeah, no, I mean, you've been talking about Kenny Omega a bit there, and I love the connection that you had with him on the come up of his career. And he's been having some barn burner type matches all throughout. Like his match with Minoru Suzuki was one I was really liking. And then his match with Michael Elgin as well. I mean, he's been turning in some barn burners as well. But I wanted to talk about the Toru Yano matchup there with Kenny Omega. Because that's been getting some controversy a little bit. Going back to DDT route a bit.
Yeah, it's North Americans whining, right? I mean, it's a style. It's like, oh, that doesn't make sense, or that's too silly. Everything makes sense. There's a purpose to every spot in Japanese wrestling. Rarely is there gratuity without purpose and a means to an end. It's, cheap heat, if you will, is something that is hard-earned in Japan because it's a different way. I mean, WWE has tried some shows in Japan, and those crowds that show up for... Let's put it this way. I don't want to be, insulting, but I dare say the Japanese wrestling fans are more educated than North American wrestling fans in the sense that they understand the product that they're watching. They went to the WWE show, they cheered like WWE fans. They went to a Japanese show, they cheer like Japanese fans. Whereas in North America, everybody's yelling two and one fall and all that stuff generically or holy shite.
Yeah.
I don't know the point of profanity on this fine program, but it's
drop
more
the profanity. You can, man, it's all good.
Oh, okay, it's more like it's more sheepish than fanish, right? It's like, hey, everybody's doing that, so let's do it, which is cool. It adds to a certain ambiance, but the days of ECW are over. that was lightning in a bottle.
And, oh, absolutely.
Fans got to get a little more original. NXT, they try way too hard, that crowd. It's almost embarrassing.
And, a lot of the indie stuff I started out watching in terms of indie wrestling, it was, circa 2004, 2005. And even back then, I sort of had the inkling that we would sort of invariably jump the shark with the whole crowd chants thing. And it sort of just amounts to, almost the crowd getting themselves over, unwittingly, and they're sort of, ignoring the wrestlers to a degree.
Yeah, and the some things that I enjoy, too, is when, you got the old stuff coming out, like the You Screwed Bretts and that. It's like, come on, guys. It's old hat.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you got to look at the genesis of that, and a lot of that came from the Attitude Era, where most characters back then were written to get, you know, the Val Venus types and the, you know, New Age Outlaw types, the Suckets, and if you ain't down with that, the crowd participation. I mean, if you don't have the crowd involved with the show, it's not much of a show. It's just two people in the ring doing whatever. You got to think about entertainment first on a professional wrestling level. And it doesn't matter if it's Japan or North America or anything of that nature. But I'm excited for the G1 and where it's going to go. And, of course, delving into North America, I mean, they did those recent shows in California where they crowned the new United States champion. And, again, huge success. I mean, they ran the Long Beach Convention Center, I believe. So it wasn't a big venue. And Kenny Omega did another promo talking about we want to run a venue next year with 20,000 people. Ambitious? Yes. Possible? For sure. But I'm not sure New Japan can do it because I think there's a reason why they did in California, because they've had some moderate success over the years with shows in the past in California, and there's a huge Japanese population in California as well. So that ties in to the product. I mean, could they look at a place like Seattle? Possibly. Maybe Chicago? Maybe. But I think they'd be safe to stick to California, maybe New York. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. And we're kind of talking about their international expansion plans they're going with, and they are showing love to certain gaijins. We were talking about Kenny Omega. You mentioned Zack Sabre Jr., but another guy that seems to be being booked pretty favorably in the G1 so far is Tama Tonga.
Yeah, I mean, that's a family connection again, right? I mean, his old man, Haku, I believe, is his dad, if I recall. I'm pretty sure. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure Haku's his dad. One of the toughest guys, and it's nice to see these generational talents coming along. Tama's got some work to do, there's no doubt about it, but you can just see how smart they are with the booking in Japan. You know, like, again, not to toot the Kenny Omega horn too much, but it's hard not to when he's the best on the planet. A little bit of bias there. But you see, you know, you're bringing up the other matches like with Toriano and stuff. You know, being able to stylistically switch is what Japan's all about. That's what makes you the best, is being able to go in there and adapt to your opponent and stylistically. You know, that's where WWE differs from Japan hugely, where you see a John Cena match, you see a John Cena match. But in Japan, you never know what you're going to get. And that's what excites me to see if WWE, for example, gets Nakamura and Styles in the ring together, if they're actually going to let them do their thing. That would be incredible. For a guy like me, I mean, I'm in my 40s, so I got a little old school wrestling on the brain. So, you know, their product is leaning towards younger people, obviously, not me. So my opinion is meh to the WWE, really. But that's the kind of stuff I like to see. I like to watch. I like to see. I like the snug style, the strong style, the booking that makes sense. And yeah, I mean, seeing, going back to not getting too far off the topic, but seeing Gaijin booked favorably, I mean, it's great. The Young Bucks in the tag division, you know, Romero, those guys, even though I think they just broke up, Roppongi Vice, just great talents, you know, that they're pushing from North America, respectfully, too.
Yeah, and I mean, we've been talking about some of the high flyers, some guys who have that aspect to their game, but there's a lot of guys who work like that really good, snug, strong style. Like, we've seen a lot of good pairings with guys like Yuji Nagata, Hiroki Goto, Togi Makabe, and Tomohiro Ishii, so I've been excited by that. I was interested with the way Bad Luck Fale has been booked, because they've given him some wins. Like, he got a win over Naito in the G1 tournament, but he's also put over certain guys like Zack Sabre Jr. and whatnot. So it's just interesting. Like, there's so many fun options with the G1 as well. I mean, like, we even saw Michael Elgin go over on.
Yeah, forgot to mention him. I'm a huge Elgin fan.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Elgin was a guy that, like, when I was a young wrestling fan in Oshawa, I got to see him.
Yeah, Canadians everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, GCW. Yeah, I was there, like, every month checking out the shows. And, like, there was a certain sense of, like, this guy's got something going on. And, like, he's really just turned it up to that, you know, next level in the years since then.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a growth process. And, of course, Kenny Omega putting him over in the G1. I mean, again, Japan, everybody's got their kryptonite. That's the style of booking. There's that one guy that is just an absolute pain in the ass.
Good point.
And, you know, and that's what they do. I mean, Kenny Omega's on the top of the world chasing Okada, and all of a sudden he drops a bout to Elgin. It's like, what the hell's going on? But see, that's the psychology of the G1 tournament. Because they're going every day, every day, every day, and, you know, A block will go every second day, and B block will go every second day, but these wrestlers are on the undercard in tag matches. So they're working every night through. And it is by far, regardless of what you want to say about professional wrestling and people dropping the F word and all that stuff about it, it is head and shoulders the toughest stretch of professional wrestling anywhere on the planet is the G1 tournament. And if you don't take the time to get a DVD and watch the ones from the past and the ones from the present, and now more than ever, there's that much more participants. There never used to be this many guys. You know, now there's two blocks of, I think, a dozen guys, 10 guys in each block, at least 11 or 12 guys in each block. It never used to be that many guys. But now it is a marathon. And each guy is going 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes every night. Like, holy crap.
Yeah, and you have certain options where, like, a guy can put someone else over in the vacuum of the G1, but it doesn't necessarily hurt the guy who's taking the pinfall. If anything, it can be used to create an interesting match down the line, or even carry out a full program. I mean, I'm kind
of absolutely doing. They're planting seeds all over the tournament.
Yeah, I love it. And like, there's been like some barn burner matches for sure. One of the matches I wanted to mention was Tanahashi Ibushi. I mentioned a couple matches earlier, but Tanahashi Ibushi was really great one. And sort of talking about that storytelling aspect. And it's just like that Japanese psychology playing into that. Cause they had their match together in 2015, very, very competitive. Tanahashi went over back then, but seeing Kota Ibushi get the win now, good look for both guys. It's classic junior heavyweight going over on the established heavyweight style of booking. So I'm kind of going off on that match. Are there any matches that are really standing out to you that you could point as favorites so far?
Well, yeah, like again, you know, as much as I talk about Omega, you know, Evil's having a good tournament too. You know,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, he's looking fantastic, and again, Elgin, even though he's only won a couple of bouts, Elgin has looked bang on. And again, it's who you've worked against. And even look at a guy like Ibushi, right? Like, just look at the talent. Like, what do you do with these guys? And again, people look at Ibushi and Omega because again, they play off their, you know, they used to be a tag team known as the Golden Lovers.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Ibushi, people forget Ibushi's the one who beat Kenny for his junior title in IWGP. So there's that story as Ibushi gets built up into a heavyweight. That's a big deal to move up from light heavy or a junior to a heavyweight. And both Kenny and Ibushi are on the same track. Kenny's taken off a little more with Ibushi doing the tournament in WWE last year in the Cruiserweight Classic. It's too bad he didn't sign. But, you know, such is life. I think Ibushi, very much Kota Ibushi will be the next one. I'm pretty confident after Okada, they might give Naito another run. Christ, they might even put it on Suzuki for a transition. I don't even know. I mean, Suzuki Gun is getting a hell of a push again, too, you know, for credibility.
I'm a big Minoru Suzuki mark. Seeing him with the never open weight title, I think just perfectly suits him at this juncture. And I think it's interesting because they're sort of booking him as a babyface in certain settings. Like, for instance, when they had the Tama Tonga situation, how he does the classic go through the ropes and the crowd hits the Kaze Ninare. Tama Tonga just fully interrupted that before it happened, and it elicited a heel reaction. So kind of an interesting, like almost like they're booking him as a tweener a bit.
You know, and to me, I'll be honest with you, one of the names that is missing from the G1 tournament that probably would have sent this thing sideways is Cody Rhodes. I mean, that's a guy that I think is missing from the G1 tournament this year, considering, you know, the guy's had a rocket up his ass since he left WWE. The guy has been successful everywhere he's gone. You know, I correct myself. Cody, the American Nightmare. I have to go with it. The guy is going with Cody and the success him and his wife have had, because his wife is working a lot of shows. He's been up in the Edmonton area. I think he's coming back to Edmonton for an event here with PWA. I mean, Kurt Sorokin does a fantastic job in Edmonton promoting those events. If anybody's in the Edmonton area, support the PWA when they put on their big shows, because, again, it's one of those heart and soul things. And, you know, I got friends there, too, like Andy Anderson. People might remember him as a star in IWA Puerto Rico back in the late 90s during the Attitude Era. He's in Edmonton, and he works the back and runs that locker room a little bit too, and having that influence and that talent. Anyways, just to put over for a local guy. That's all. Kurt does a great job, but again, not getting off the topic with Cody. I mean, he's there. I mean, you saw the angle they did if you saw the event they did in California recently with when Cody fought Okada on the first night.
Yeah.
And there's Kenny Omega going to throw in the towel. You know, like there's that. There's so many different levels. Cause you can have Kenny pissing around with Elgin. You can have Kenny pissing around with Cody, and then you've got Kenny chasing Okada. Like, think about the physical nature of all three of those, and the difference in each wrestler, and what has to be done to make that work. That's Japan in a nutshell. In North America, 1 + 1 = 2. In Japan, it's the Pythagoras theorem. It's -4ab² to the power of this, but it balances. It's incredible.
Yeah, I totally get what you mean, because you can notice a certain aspect of an angle, but then if you, like, mediate on it a little bit more, you're kind of like, oh, well, there's, like, this tendril to it, there's this tendril, now all of a sudden this guy is involved in the narrative. And I totally agree, there's been some cool seeds planted with Kenny and Cody in the sense of who's going to betray who, like, who's going to become the quote-unquote leader of the Bullet Club, like, and they've had touches in the Omega-Okada matches like that, where, like, Cody going to throw in the towel, and then the roles were reversed when Omega was going to throw in the towel. So.
And again, you know, another guy that's under the radar that I think is going to absolutely explode here in the next couple of years is Juice Robinson. And Juice is a guy who some people may remember as the hippie character CJ Parker in NXT, the guy who busted Kevin Owens' nose on his last day in the company. You know, Kevin Owens debut in NXT, he's the guy that gave him the palm strike to the face that busted up his nose. But such a skilled talent, you know, and a name like Juice Robinson, pretty solid. You know, I like the name. His work is, you know, he's got some work to do still, of course, but wow, you can just see the upside of his talent, and perhaps, you know, you'll see him down the road, you know, making a surprise Royal Rumble appearance or something, you know, because WWE hates seeing their own leave and be successful and then come back, you know, or not so much hate, but, you know, when they let somebody go. A lot of times, you know, they'll come back. Look at Luke Gallows. There's a prime example of a guy who was absolutely crapped on his first run in the company in WWE, goes to Japan, and now he comes back, and Gallows and Anderson are so solid.
Oh, yeah, great tag team, and yeah, absolutely. Like, certain guys should almost leave. I mean, I guess it's relative to any company, but certain times, like, if talent has kind of, like, run their course in a certain promotion for that point, and then it's like, oh, maybe go somewhere else, get a fresh coat of paint, and then come back.
Yeah, but see, that right there, you've just explained the old territory system.
Yeah,
you know, before the internet blew everything up, like the old territory system. If a guy got stale, he did a loser leaves town match or an injury angle, and he buggered off to another territory where nobody knew him. You know, or they changed his name. WWE used to do that all the time back in the old days. You know, they had, you know, Tracy Smothers come in as Freddie Joel Floyd, you know, for example, or even Kerry Von Erich when he came into WWF the first time. You know, they simply called him the Texas Tornado.
Yeah, I think so many saw that as an affront, like the classic WWE above all sort of a thing. I think that was people's mentality with that. But all the, like, I think it's fresh coat of paint, and Vince loves having certain guys come on his roster, and then he gives them kind of a specific gimmick. Sort of like when Dusty Rhodes was, like, given the polka dot kind of aspect to, when he came
that
to
was
WWE.
That was an absolute rib, though.
It totally...
No, that was, I mean, even... The character Virgil was a rib on Dusty, you know.
Yeah, very true.
And God bless Dusty Rhodes, and God rest his soul. One of the smartest men in the history of the business. And when they call the man the learning tree, he is affected. I mean, and I unfortunately never had the honor and the pleasure of being in a locker room with Dusty Rhodes or at a Cauliflower Alley event, a Cauliflower Alley reunion to meet him or see him. I mean, holy crap, Dylan, to be in a room with a guy like that, that's, you know, you see how smart Dustin is and you see how smart Cody is. I mean, when you have that kind of pedigree, you know what you're doing. You know what you're talking about. And that's a guy like Dusty whose influence is going to be felt in the professional wrestling business for decades to come.
Oh, yeah, an invaluable source of information. I mean, he's occupied the top tiers of pretty much any and every role you could. I mean, like, the Dusty finish is, like, part of the, you know, the booking parlance nowadays.
Well,
and stuff like that. So, like,
if you want to look at the ultimate politician, it's Dusty Rhodes. He had a horrible look. You know, by any wrestling standard, he never had a great body, but he knew how to make it happen like a junkyard dog. You know, you had charisma. That is the biggest thing missing in professional wrestling in North America, is the ability to let people generically show their charisma. Everything is a pre-packaged deal. This is your ingredient. Here you go. This is what you got. Go with it. It's very rare that WWE lets anybody. The last time anything has ever run generically at WWE was when Daniel Bryan's Yes caught on. That was the last time something was generic, you know, organically. So I should keep using generic. Organically happened. It's very rare that the company can't stop an avalanche. They're magical like that.
Yeah, absolutely. All very good points there. But going ahead with the G1, I mean, we're getting somewhat close to wrapping it up. August 13th scheduled to be the finals. So we've still got a few more days left of this. Do you have any, you know, certain predictions going forward or anything you see sort of unfolding with the G1 tournament here on out?
I think my final four, if I was to say my final four, in each block, I'm going to go with each block. I think it's going to be Okada, Omega, Suzuki, and Elgin for some reason. Because I think they're going to tease it where Kenny's got to go through Elgin to get to the finals again or something. Something crazy like that. And in the A block, you know, obviously, it's the A block, if people look at the standings, that's another thing G1 does people may not be familiar with, is they do have a point system for wins. Disqualifications, pinfalls, doesn't matter how you win. A win is 2 points, period, and I love that. But Tanahashi is the John Cena of New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Oh, he's there.
He brought their company back from the ashes. If there was a guy that could probably transition to WWE and look great doing it, it's Tanahashi. I'd love him in a WrestleMania match. Even Okada. Okada's swagger is like, you know, you can't beat me. I'm the rainmaker, and I'll drop kick your freaking head off and then clothesline your head off after that.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I love about Okada. So for sure, Tanahashi, Naito. It's hard to ignore Zack Sabre Jr. and Kota Ibushi. I think this might be Kota Ibushi's heavyweight coming out party. So you might see him in the semifinal as well. I mean, everybody's teasing Ibushi and Omega, but I strongly think that it's going to be Zack Sabre Jr. and Kenny Omega in the first ever Gaijin final of a G1. And a reason why I say that it's going to be an old Gaijin final for the G1, not only because Kenny teased another Gaijin win on a promo the other night, you know, a Gaijin winning back-to-back tournaments is special, but an old Gaijin final adds another asterisk to the mix and gets the Japanese on their guard, which is another booking angle. Are we losing our culture? Are we losing our tournament? It's kind of like how Canada freaks out every time they lose a hockey match on an international level. That's how the Japanese think about their pro wrestling. It's very guarded. It's so, like you were saying earlier, all the Gaijin are being pushed. Wow. It's the opportunity this year. And I really see Zack Sabre Jr. and Kenny Omega just having an absolute epic battle at some point in this tournament. But the finals is what I'm looking at for them, I think, if that's going to happen. That's my prediction there. Because Okada doesn't need to be in the final. He's the champion.
Yeah.
Omega's,
I mean,
got, Omega.
I could see I could see Omega going over on Okada, and then maybe they do like the run back at Wrestle Kingdom. So it would time out perfectly because it's kind of that confluence of, you know, trying to get the Gaijin guys over sort of thing. But it would also benefit Okada because if he were to hold the belt up until Wrestle Kingdom, he would be the longest reigning champion in the IWGP belt.
I'm not so sure that you know, Kenny's having a great time in Japan. But don't be so sure that the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega, collectively known as the Elite, don't find their way to North America sooner than later.
That would certainly be very interesting to see. And yeah, I'm definitely stoked about what's happened already in the G1 climax here and what is kind of coming ahead there. But is there any parting thoughts you wanted to add as we're wrapping up here? Man, I appreciate all the time.
No, no problem. I can go on. Sorry for bouncing all over the place, but this business is just, you know, between MMA and professional wrestling and just combative sports in general, I just have a passion and a love for it that you know, some people might find a bit weird at times, but people who are like me that follow this stuff, they get it. They get it. It's like a, you know, look at you.
You know, I'm a weirdo too, man. It's all good.
Yeah, right? You take it to the, and by no means am I attacking your character here. I mean, you do a podcast. So, I mean, you've taken it to another level, which there's nothing wrong with to me. But, yeah, as far as, you know, New Japan Pro Wrestling goes, if you get an opportunity to get New Japan World, which is their version of their WWE network, I highly recommend it. It's well worth the money. And you will be, you will open yourself up to a brand new world of awesomeness. And, again, more Winnipeg influence. Don Callis is doing their commentary now with Kevin Kelly, the former broadcaster in WWE. Don Callis, another Winnipegger, and a guy I've had the pleasure of working with and working under as a booker in Winnipeg. I've worked for Don many, many nights. I've been in the ring with him quite a few times, too. And I've always, going back to when I broke in 92, I always felt Don Callis, you know, he took, you know, a lot of ribbing from the boys back then, but I always knew Don was an incredible talent. The respect I have for him, both professionally and personally, he's done it his way from day one. And his success is indicative of that. And to see him get in New Japan Pro Wrestling, and he knows the product too. You know, no offense to Jim Ross, but Japan's outside his element. You know, he sounds great doing it because it's good old JR. It's a way for North Americans to
But there's a certain disconnect. There's a certain disconnect. I sort of noticed that as well. I mean, JR is great either way doing JR, but there was a certain point I was just kind of like, this doesn't really suit the product. I think he was trying to describe Ishii at one point, and he described him. He's like, oh, he's a goddamn appliance.
Yeah, well, not just that, but, I mean, he struggled with the names of talent, too, at times.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas Don Callis is a very educated, intelligent man who will look at the product and study the product and truly know the product. And, boy, oh, boy, that is incredible. I mean, he's even getting into it with talent already, with Naito chasing him off commentary one night on one of the G1 nights. I mean, he's an all-around professional through and through, and it's great to see him get some exposure again in the professional wrestling world, because I think his window of opportunity was closed shut way too early. I mean, he's way too – he's been out of the scene for so many years, and in a snap, he's right on game, and he's going to get better, which is scary.
No, he's super talented. I always loved his Cyrus character back in the day, too. The network is not happy about this. No, it's great.
Well, yeah. I mean, even going back as the Jackal, when he was at the Truth Commission, he simply made chicken soup out of chicken shit. That was horrible booking.
Yeah.
And he made it happen, and then he became with the Acolytes, with Bradshaw. And, you know, he may not have made a few friends in his first run in WWF, because, again, he's a guy with very strong convictions and very professional, again, but very, you know, I think a certain way, I'm going to act a certain way, and that's not bad. It's just some people don't get it. But man, if you have an opportunity to hang around Don Callis, even if it's just for lunch, it's well worth it. He's top 10 all time in my books.
Yeah, definitely a guy whose brain I'd like to pick at some point, but glad we could set this thing.
Yep.
Great talk with Vice Chairman at Grand Prairie Combative Sports Commission, veteran Canadian wrestler in the Manitoba scene, Steve Stryker. Really just big thanks for your time, Darren, and hopefully you enjoy the rest of your day there, man.
Dylan, more than a pleasure to do the show. I'll do it any time. And, you know, as Jim Jeffries would say, we can all do a little bit better.
That's perfect. That's a great parting thought to end things off on, man. Thanks for your time.
All the best, Dylan. All the best to everyone. Take care.
Yeah, all the best to you. Take care, man. Bye.